I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, August 3rd. Some breaking news on New York City COVID policy. Here it is from the New York Times just moments ago. New York City is expected to require proof of vaccination for indoor dining and fitness. And it says Mayor Bill de Blasio plans to announce this morning that New York City will require proof of vaccination for people participating in indoor activities, including at restaurants, gyms, and performances, his latest attempt to spur more vaccinations, according to a city official. The policy, this says, is similar to mandates issued in France and Italy last month and is believed to be the first of its kind in the United States. The Times says the program will start later this month, and after a transition period, enforcement will begin in mid-September when schools are expected to reopen and more workers could return to offices in Manhattan. Gives a little background on the situation in France, or the policy in France, where it says people will soon have to show a health pass providing proof of vaccination or a recent negative test to visit indoor bars, restaurants, and gyms. It has already been implemented at amusement parks, theaters, and venues, hosting more than 50 people over there. In New York City, proof of vaccination will be required, and there will be no testing option. So that from the New York Times moment ago. In a minute, we're going to talk to our health and science editor, Sikhan Akpan, about all this. But let me also take a step back on some of the new CDC guidelines and where they come from. Like, why were most of the people in the Cape Cod COVID cluster, Provincetown, people who had been vaccinated? Well, because Cape Cod and Massachusetts in general has a very high vaccination rate. It was overwhelmingly vaccinated people who were exposed. And why were there no deaths among those 900 who tested positive for COVID? Same reason, because the large majority had gotten their shots. It's so different from, say, Florida or Louisiana, where the Delta variant is also surging, but much more of the population has declined the vaccine and the hospitalization and death rates are approaching their winter highs. But the Cape Cod cluster was nevertheless among the reasons the Centers for Disease Control updated its guidelines to recommend that even vaccinated people return to wearing masks in indoor public spaces in areas of high or substantial transmission, and that kids in schools return to full masking this fall. And of course, we're also seeing more and more vaccine mandates coming from employers. You know about the city workers and the state workers. We have the real estate giant, the related companies now saying get vaccinated or get fired, medical and religious exemptions only. And now instead of going for masking mandates, Mayor de Blasio, according to this report, is going to go for a vaccine mandate instead for restaurants, gyms, performances, proof of vaccination for people participating in public indoor activities. So where are we? With us now, WNYC and Gothamist health and science editor, Sikhan Akpan. His latest two articles on Gothamist are called How Parents Can Prepare for the Delta Variant, Given Most Kids Are Unvaccinated, and one called The CDC Pivoted on the Delta Variant, Regular Life Can Continue. Hi, Sikhan. Thanks for coming on. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Brian. Great summary. I think our work here is done, actually.
Okay. Nice to see you. Talk to you next week. But you might have to update your headline from Regular Life Can Continue to Regular Life Can Continue If You're Vaccinated. Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was sort of the subtext of the piece, which is that, regular life is never going back to what it was before the pandemic. You know, I think one way to think about this is, you know, I played sports in college. I played soccer. And, you know, every once in a while you'd pick up an ankle injury and you'd have to wear a brace to sort of get your leg back to normal. I think that society at large, you know, especially in New York City, like we're trying to heal, like we're trying to get rid of COVID-19. And so we need these health measures that are like braces. We need masks, we need vaccinations in order to get through this.
You note in your article, which of course came out before the news this morning about this vaccine mandate for indoor activities, you noted that Broadway is set to return with full capacity and now a vaccine mandate. They had already announced it for Broadway shows. But after the Provincetown cluster and the findings of high transmissibility between vaccinated people, do you know if Broadway moguls or their science advisors are reconsidering even that?
I haven't heard that, and I don't know why you would, right? So the takeaway with vaccination and just the spread of infections, you know, just catching the virus, is that the vaccine still will reduce your chances of catching the virus by quite a lot. You know, we know that they'll protect against severe disease almost completely, but they will also, you know, reduce your odds of catching the virus by, you know, whether it's 60 to 70 to 80%. So you would still have very low transmission in a setting like a Broadway theater, most likely. I think, you know, the big takeaway from what the CDC put out last week is that if case rates continue to rise to a very, very high level, that's when that indoor scenario among the vaccinated might become more risky, because you might have more chances and opportunities for spread in that situation.
No, I was just going to follow up and ask, it's interesting that you say that the chance of a lot of transmission within a Broadway theater among an all-vaccinated audience would be low after what everybody's been hearing in the news about the Provincetown cluster, where apparently on that rainy 4th of July weekend on Cape Cod, a lot of people were going into indoor spaces instead of outdoor spaces. And that's how it got transmitted so much.
Yeah, and that's the moment that we're in right now, right? And it's a moment that we've had a lot during this pandemic where people need to sort of keep two ideas in their mind at the same time, which can be a bit of a struggle, right? So I think in an ideal scenario, you know, transmission rates are really low, because everyone's vaccinated. But if you have a situation where, you know, 40% of people are unvaccinated, 50% of people are unvaccinated, and then everything's open and everything's mingling, right? As I've described before, our vaccinations work a little bit like the shields on the Millennium Falcon, right? If you hit them enough times, something is gonna break through. They're gonna wear down. So, really, what we're trying to avoid is a scenario where there's just so much transmission that infections start spreading through vaccinated people and then reaching unvaccinated populations, like, you know, kids, right? Like, most kids are unvaccinated right now, or people who are immunocompromised. That was my take of the CDC guidance last week, is that the spread is so high among unvaccinated people that it's now putting vaccinated people at risk and in danger of threatening, you know, their loved ones who are unvaccinated.
Our colleague Liz Kim just tweeted, remembering a question that I asked the mayor last month. She writes, last month, Brian Lehrer asked Mayor de Blasio if he would go full Macron, that is, require vaccinations for restaurants and bars. Looks like New York City is going there. So full Macron is now full de Blasio. Listener on Twitter asks, wondering why there's a vax mandate if there have only been a handful of deaths recorded in New York City recently. Yesterday was 4. This seems like fear-mongering.
Yeah, I think everyone, we have this tendency right now to think in the moment, right? I think we have a hard time sort of looking out to the future. And one way to approach COVID is say, you know, worry about what's happening today, but really worry about what's going to happen tomorrow, right? Because we know that, 30% of infections are going to be asymptomatic. We know we're going to have a hard time tracking some of these infections. So they're going to be getting into places that we can't see in real time. And so even though the deaths and the hospitalizations might be low now, I think you have to consider what it's going to look like in September and October, now that everything's fully reopened, once people start really hanging out inside, once schools reopen to classrooms, right? You know, we have this rule right now that a certain number of positive tests can lead to schools shutting down, which I know a lot of parents aren't very happy about, right? So imagine a situation where we see the types of rates of transmission that we've seen in kids, like in the UK, after everything's really opened up. Imagine you get that in a situation in New York City where schools are going to shut down after like a handful of cases. Like, do you really want to go through a situation where you have to rejigger your schedule every few days because your school had to shut down again? I think what we're really looking for, and you know, speaking of regular life, is consistency, our ability to get back into the routines that we love, the routines that really define our human experience. So I would say, just because the hospitalizations and deaths are low now, I mean, based on the transmission that we're seeing, I don't think it's gonna stay that way.
Another question from Twitter. What does this mean for employees in these venues? Is there a vaccination requirement for them? I would just answer that by saying, I presume the answer to that is yes. If there's going to be a requirement for customers, there's going to be a requirement for employees. No reason to think any different, as far as you know, Sikon, right?
Yeah, based on our reporting, which was actually done by Liz Kim, and she should have a story that's up now, or if not, coming soon. It's going to apply to workers and customers at indoor dining, indoor fitness, and indoor entertainment and performances.
And another listener via Twitter asks, the guideline should mean no one under 12 can participate in indoor activities. Won't that cause issues? So that's a good question. If we take this literally, and I realize this is a breaking story and not all the details have even been released yet, but if it's really proof of vaccination for anyone to participate in indoor activities like going to restaurants or gyms or performances in New York City, then that would exclude anybody who is under 12 who can't get a vaccine right now. So I assume there's going to be some kind of other set of rules for kids.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a situation where kids mask, you know, they come in with their vaccinated parents and they mask while they're sitting at the table. Maybe you're doing some extra social distancing for kids. Maybe you're checking on whether or not they have any symptoms before they go into one of these venues. So you're doing a questionnaire. It will be interesting to see how the mayor is going to roll this out. And I mean, I think he's literally giving the details live right now. And that was a big question that I had when this story broke, right? Is resources. Are we going to train bouncers for bars on how to validate vaccination cards? Huh. Are we going to train restaurant staff on the proper protocols for these differing scenarios? Like, what do you do with kids? I think it'll be interesting to see how the restaurant industry responds to this new requirement.
And I see, by the way, listeners, now that I've been citing the New York Times version of this, that our version is now up on Gothamist by our colleague Liz Kim. Headline, New York City to require vaccinations for indoor dining, gyms, and other venues. So you can go to Gothamist.com if you want to get Liz's indoor take. Here's a good sciencey question for you, Sikon, I think, from Karen in Norwood, New Jersey, around WNYC, as opposed to Norwood, the Bronx. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Didn't know there was a Norwood, the Bronx.
There is.
So can you hear? Yeah. So I am wondering a little bit about how we're tracking COVID that's coming across the southern border. Now, the one thing that comes to my mind is how new variants spread. If a new variant develops in another country and we have a population coming across the border, it doesn't seem like they're tracking the rates of COVID or quarantining. Is there any way that we would know how many people are coming into New York City, for example, or the, you know, the New York metro region that aren't being tracked that may have had COVID? It doesn't seem like there's any data with regard to that. And my big concern around that, of course, is will we not know there's a new variant here until it's too late? Hopefully not, but.
Thank you. Interesting question. Seacon?
Yeah, that is an interesting question. I thought when she said southern border at first that she meant Delaware. And I think, I make that joke because variants can arise anywhere. You know, I think the more uncontrolled spread that we have, the more opportunities there are for mutation and the more likely you're going to get a variant, right? People remember that New York, that there was a variant that originated here that we were worried about earlier this year. So
that's right. In fact, that was like in my neighborhood at Columbia, at New York Presbyterian Hospital, right, on 168th Street. So Upper Manhattan, and people started calling it the Washington Heights variant. And people in Washington Heights were like, no, don't blame us for starting some kind of epidemic. They just discovered this in patients for the first time in a hospital that happens to be located in this neighborhood. So when we say south of the border or identify any geographic area, I mean, that's why we went to, you know, Delta variant instead of India variant, Alpha variant instead of UK variant, that whole thing, right?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, to directly answer the question, you know, there's this field of study essentially called like geographic phylogenetics, which is a fancy way of saying you can build family trees of viruses that, you know, based on their pattern of mutations, or you can tell where the virus came from. And I would say there's an international effort to do that, and there's this giant database where all the variants go into, so that way scientists can literally track, like, oh, hey, you know, this new Lambda variant, oh, it, you know, we're pretty sure it started to really take hold here, and now, oh yeah, you can look at sort of it moving into this country or that country. So I would say unofficially there is a way to track variants that come from overseas, but truthfully, you know, a really dangerous variant can sort of arise anywhere there is a lot of transmission and there's a lot of mutation, you know. So it's really not us versus them to some degree. It's really like we're all in this together to get COVID rates down as low as possible.
Listener on Twitter asks, my digital New York State Empire Pass, the vaccination pass, says that it expires on September 26th at midnight. Does that mean that on September 27th, I can't go indoors at restaurants? And I'm pretty sure that I know the answer to that, which is that they have a new version up. You can go and re-register for that Empire Pass in the same way that you did before, and it will now extend to September of next year. Do you know anything about that? But I'm pretty sure that's true, Seacon, unless you have any other information.
Yeah, that's what we've heard too, that essentially you can download a new version of the app and it extends the expiration date out to a year. But, you know, I think there is a sense that, you know, potentially at some point, if we do see some waning with the vaccines, that you might need to put an expiration date on that. But I don't think we've really reached the stage where we're planning that out, right? You know, I think if boosters ever get approved, then you might want to start thinking about adding expiration dates to vaccine passports. But we're very early days.
Yeah. Hey, we've been talking about the Provincetown Cape Cod cluster as such a motivation for the CDC to tighten the guidelines, and now for Mayor de Blasio to do this, and we're getting a call from Provincetown. So let's talk to Eric up there on the Cape. Eric, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, thank you. I mean, I think the pre-town examination or experience showed that the vaccinated people can transmit the virus. However, one has to remember where that virus is transmitted inside and under which circumstances. There are about four or five bars, dance clubs that are open in P-Town. Many of those have very low ceilings. They were packed to an unbelievable amount over through July 4th week, which is a gay circuit party. People were ready to go have fun. The governor had opened up, inside dining and clubs, and it was packed. People were chest to chest, tightly packed on the dance floor. You really couldn't move that much, having fun, no social distancing. So it would take very little for one person who is asymptomatic or symptomatic for it to spread and spread in that group. My question then is, look at the various circuit parties that happened afterwards, such as the Fire Island Pines party. That's an outdoor event. How much transmission happened there? So I think when we're talking about this, we also have to remember that there is some indoor, it is highly contagious, the Delta variant, of course, but it was a very specific experience. And we have to put it into perspective. Thank you.
I'm glad you raised the indoors, outdoors question. Sikhan, you do ask in your latest article, if the CDC says the Delta variant is as contagious as chickenpox, does that mean we should mask up again outdoors? So does it, and what do you say to the caller from P-Town?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's on the right track, and it goes back to what I said at the top about trying to keep, multiple rules that are sort of overlapping in one's mind at once, right? Like, I think everyone is set up in their brains the idea that, okay, outdoors is completely safe, and indoors is really what you need to worry about. But if you're in a situation where it's so crowded outdoors, one way to think about it is, you remember Pigpen from Charlie Brown?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had like a little cloud of germs and dust around them, right? Like, if you're just like really packed into a group, so, you look at the Lollapalooza festival in Chicago this weekend, there were photos of people just packed shoulder to shoulder. And then you plug in the Delta variant, which we're saying, okay, we're finding 1,000 times more virus in people's noses relative to past variants. Okay, if somebody sneezes, right, somebody breathes too hard out of their nose, you have to think, okay, that's 1,000 times more virus that's entering that immediate space, your little pig pen area. And if you're so close together, like, you're going to have more opportunities for transmission with the Delta variant relative to the Alpha variant, right? I mean, I attended Lollapalooza, this is in like 2007, and I remember seeing Radiohead, and they did this thing where they dropped the barriers right before the show started, and everybody just rushed forward, and you're packed in, and I was, I could barely breathe. Right, I was just so packed in next to people. In that situation, Delta is going to find a way to get from nose to nose. And so it's not that, I would say 80-90% of outdoor scenarios are probably completely safe, right? Because you're going to be far enough away from people to be fine. But if you're really, really packed into a tight space, then yeah, you're giving the virus a better chance of spreading outdoors.
And Emily in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Emily.
Hi. So I had a quick question. And your guest touched upon it earlier regarding bouncers and restaurant staff being able to validate the vaccination documentation. How concerned would we have to be about people trying to present false vaccination documentation?
Yeah, I think that was a huge question rolling around in my mind once I saw how the NYC COVID Pass works, or safe COVID Safe app works. You're essentially just uploading a photo of your vaccination card to the app. One of our reporters, Matt Katz, kind of looked at this over the weekend. I'm really interested to see how they plan to validate those records without tying it into some type of database of of records. You know, I think one of the pros around the Excelsior Pass is that it's, you know, directly tied into the state database, uses QR codes, which, you know, are a little trickier to defraud. But I think going based off of the photo system, I am wondering what safeguards are going to be in place to prevent people from either sharing. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be giving people ideas, but, you know, sharing their vaccination cards among each other and taking photos and uploading them into the apps. You know, what training are they going to provide to bouncers to really, you know, look at those scans and say, oh yeah, this is the person I am. I've matched up their name to this vaccination card. I think ideally what we need is a federal system for a vaccine passport, because, you know, the federal government knows everyone in the country that has been vaccinated. But there was so much political upheaval over vaccine passports earlier this year that I haven't heard any indication that the feds are moving towards a vaccine passport or a system that could at least underlay local systems.
And we thank our health and science editor, Sikhan Akpan. Sikhan, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.